Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Command Zone podcast. You are watching slash listening to me, DJ, and I am here with...
Murph. I'm here. We're going to do something very, very special today, aren't we, DJ?
We are. We're going to spoil this entire pre-constructed deck. This is Aura of Courage, and I love pre-constructed decks. They have tons of new cards. They have great reprint value, and I cannot wait to talk about all the cool stuff in this thing. Ah!
It's going to be very exciting.
I'm so excited. All right, but before we get started, we got to thank the right people. First thing, Wizards of the Coast. Thank you, Wizards, for giving us this opportunity to preview this card and all the cards in this thing. It's awesome.
Thank you very much.
We also want to thank Card Kingdom. Murph, do you like Card Kingdom?
I love Card Kingdom. So if you go to cardkingdom.com/command zone, that's the link I use whenever I want to get my cards quickly. I've noticed that now that we're starting to come a little bit out of the pandemic, that Card Kingdom's been a lot more snappy. They've been like getting cards to you within a couple days, because I know a lot of places have been having like shipping delays and stuff, but Card Kingdom is right there. Get you the cards you want, get you the cards you need whenever you need them.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that you're going to want to pre-order some of these new cards from these Commander pre-constructed decks. Pick up the whole deck itself. Get ready for all this good stuff. And while you're over there, you can also check out some Ultra Pro products, okay? Or at your local game store, because Ultra Pro is amazing. Here's the thing that I love. The art on these cards are amazing. This whole set of Forgotten Realms, this Dungeons & Dragons themes, the art is fantastic, and Ultra Pro has the licensing to do all that art. So if you see something beautiful, if you see something majestic that you want to have on your playmats, you want to grace your decks with, then you need to look at Ultra Pro products. And speaking of Ultra Pro products, the Command Zone has a Kickstarter. It is a Game Nights deck box. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. It looks really sweet. It's an Ultra Pro deck box. It fits two deck box. It fits two decks in it, some dice and stuff. It's got the big red Command Zone logo on it. Looks really sweet,
and
really sick.
And a ton of little Command Zone logos on the lining.
Logos on the inside. Oh my gosh.
It is so good. Okay, it's in limited supply, so hopefully they're still around when you're hearing this. Otherwise, go over to Kickstarter, check it out. Don't wait, because... we printed so many of them, and we can't just like make more out of nowhere.
It's already pretty low, like right now.
Right now, recording.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So. Okay, get on over there. And also, we got to thank all of the people that support us directly over on Patreon. We love our patrons so much. We talk to them on our Discord server. They get to see a lot of our content early. They're amazing. And one perk that you get for being a patron is that we dedicate an episode to one lucky one. And today's episode is dedicated to...
Mike Lopez.
Mike, you rock.
You rock, Mike. Thank you so much.
All right. So we got to get into it. We got to talk about this Bant pre-constructed deck. We got to go through all the cards. We got to talk about the reprint value in there. We got to thank Wizards one more time. One thing to note is that we have a lot of content coming out around these sets. We're going to do an upgrade guide for this deck. That's later. We're going to look at these commanders and go in detail. That's later too. We're going to evaluate every single commander card from all of the pre-constructed decks. That's later. This is the preview episode where we're going to go over things just a little bit and introduce you to the deck and get you pumped for playing it.
We're just going to show off a little bit of the mechanics, but we're not doing a very deep dive into each of the individual cards. So stick around, stay tuned for more content.
All that stuff. You should probably like and subscribe this video and like sign up, subscribe, hit the bell. Hit the bell icon, all that good stuff. All right. Cards. Let's talk about cards. Okay. There are 17 new cards, 3 new legendaries. We previewed the face commander of this a week ago, but Murph, let's give another read to...
Galea, Kindler of Hope. Galea is a 4-mana 4/4, 1 green, white, blue, vigilance, legendary creature, elf knights. You may look at the top card of your library at any time. You may cast aura and equipment spells from the top of your library. When you cast an equipment spell this way, it gains. When this equipment enters the battlefield, attach it to target creature you control. Ooh. So it seems pretty like a Voltron-ish commander, but cares about both aura and equipments together.
I love that it cares about auras and equipments together, because sometimes I don't want to pick and choose. I don't want an all aura deck or an all equipment deck.
Yeah.
I want to play the cool things that just happen to work. And so this commander now synergizes with all of them. Great colors too. Bant.
Bants, yeah.
Yeah, Bant, Voltron, Bant, Smash People seems to be really good. But also, this isn't really a smashing focused Bant commander. This seems to be value generating, you know? You play off the top of your deck. That's pretty good too.
Yeah, you want the value in order to like maybe play stuff off the top of your deck, but then incidentally I'm sure there's going to be a ton of stuff that will get your commander big or a different creature big, and you will be smashing phase and beating phase regardless. So it's an interesting cross synergy that cares about equipment, auras, value, and beating phase.
Yeah, usually in a deck that's chock full of equipment and auras, I don't need my commander to already be big. Like, I'm gonna make it big, you know? And this one lets me get card advantage by playing off the top and also, like, cheat mana.
Yeah.
Because every time you cheat an equipment onto another creature, like, that is mana cheating. Like, you've saved mana right there. And so I'm interested in cheating just, like, the most difficult to equip things onto creatures. And then doing it quickly, too. Like, you can play something off the top of your library, cheat it onto something, and then suddenly you're swinging out of nowhere. It can be really surprising to your opponents. That's the kind of synergies that you want with a Voltron deck.
Yeah, it's an interesting card. Lots of very cool, relevant abilities. I'm interested to see how it plays out.
I am too. I think that the one downside that I can see is that sometimes Voltron commanders have hexproof protection in some way.
Yeah.
Right? And there is no protection. So I think that if you play this, people are going to see how powerful it is and they're going to be like, I want to kill that.
Yeah.
You know, that might be the downside. Maybe that means that you run a lot of equipment or auras that help protect your commander.
Yeah. That help protect it, give evasion, stuff like that. I do like the vigilance though, because that means that you can just like buff it up with stats and then people aren't going to want to swing at you.
Yeah. People were talking about that, about how Voltron decks are sometimes vulnerable to being attacked back.
Yeah.
You know, and so vigilance helps out a lot more than you think. And I think that's a really good point, Murph.
Absolutely.
Okay. So overall, face commander. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Sideways. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. I think it. Thumbs up. I want to see how it plays.
For sure. All right. Now I'm going to be talking about the secondary commander in here. It's not the face card, but it's a cool one. It's Storvald, Frost Giant of Jarl. It's 4 green, white, blue for a 7/7 legendary creature giant. It has ward 3. Other creatures you control have ward 3. And when Storvald enters the battlefield or attacks, choose one or both. Target creature has base power and toughness 7/7 until end of turn. Target creature has base power and toughness 1/1 until end of turn. So you play this big old giant,
mm-hmm.
and you say, hey, friend over there, you can be a 7/7. And then you look across the table and you're like, hello, potential blocker, you can be a 1/1. So this really facilitates attacking quite nicely.
Yeah, it seems a lot of fun. Like, it seems like this is the type of card where you want to have a lot of small creatures on your end. And then once you play your commander, well, now you can buff up those small creatures and attack with it.
Hopefully you'll have something on the board too. This is a 7 drop,
which
makes me feel a little bit like it's a little bit more casual in my mind, because, you know, when I have a 7 drop, I need to have some like big splashy effect, and making 7/7s is definitely fun, but it's not like your whole team or anything like that. It's just one creature, a 7/7. I like ward.
Yeah, I like the ward 3 on it specifically because it is a 7 drop. It is a 7 CMC commander.
Or I just like creature ward in general, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think ward's a really cool mechanic. One thing that I think I like a lot in this is, pumping up hydras.
Oh,
you're pumping up things. So you can have a small creature, but I think what would be really cool is having a big hydra. And so hydras are unique, or other creatures like this that are 0/0s, but have a number of +1/+1 counters on them. So then you turn them into 7/7s, they get all of that 7 boost, and then they still have that many +1/+1 counters on them. If you were to have a 3/3 on the battlefield, 3/3 beast you happen to have, and you make it a 7/7, you're only pumping its power plus and toughness +4/+4.
Yeah.
Math.
Yeah. So Hydra is like, you keep the +1/+1 counters and it's a 0/0 base, and then you turn.
So you get 7/7. Full 7 boost on there. So that's what I like that a lot.
That's snazzy.
Craig likes Infect. Just go throw that out there. Craig likes Infect. All right. So those are the two Bant commanders in there. Those are the ones that you can easily have run this deck. But there's another new legendary. It's Selesnya. So you can't just like easily swap without removing all of the blue cards. But she's cool. Give us a read, Murph.
All right. So it is Kedabri of Mithril Hall. This is the wife of Drizzt. It is a green-white 2/2 legendary creature, human archer, with First Strike and Reach. And whenever it attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it for each equipment attached to it. You can pay 1, remove all +1/+1 counters. It deals X damage to target attacking or blocking creature and opponent controls, where X is the number of counters removed this way. So it's a pretty interesting card. A lot of like old-fashioned archers, they'll like tap and deal damage to attacking or blocking creatures.
Yeah.
This doesn't tap in order to do that, but it still has that type of text where it cares about dealing damage to attacking or blocking creatures. But in this case, it's more about equipment. It's more about +1/+1 counters. So it's a bit of a deviation from what we'd expect for an archer.
Now, there are equipments that add +1/+1 counters to creatures. So that could be good too. There are equipment that give Death Touch.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see
that. I love that.
Like, you know, attack, get the counter. It's got Death Touch. No one wants to block it. And you're like, all right, I'm going to like, you can't attack me because yep. I'm just going to remove the counters and Death Touch boop. Something to death. Or if you block, I'm just going to go boop and kill the thing. It feels very archery, right?
Yeah. It's just a green white Tim deck now.
Pew!
Deal a damage.
I kind of like that. What do you think about having to remove all the counters to deal that damage? Does that make this kind of slow? You can only activate it kind of once a turn.
Oh, you do have to remove all the counters. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I do like, it's a 2-mana commander, or a 2-mana card, and it's a 2-2, so at face value, like, it comes out early, and you can start getting value out of it pretty early. But yeah, you do have to stack the +1/+1 counters on it a little bit. I mean,
I actually think that as soon as you get to a certain size, you don't need to shoot things down, just this is a threat on its own.
Yeah.
So maybe in the early game, you control the board with some shooting, and then once you have so many counters on it, you're like, all right, that mode is kind of turned off because it's too much to take all the counters off.
Yeah.
Instead, it just keeps attacking.
Yeah.
Synergizes with equipment, something like that.
Given that, the only way that it gives itself +1/+1 counters is by attacking. You can only do that once per turn. It's likely that you're only going to have a couple counters on this at a time. And so that's when like the Death Touch equipment comes into play there, where you only want to be dealing that 1 or 2 damage. So I think it's a really, really cool, really unique build around that you can definitely get a lot of value out of.
Sounds great. Overall legendaries? You like them?
I do like them. I like the Frost Giant probably the best. It's 7 CMC,
ooh,
but it's very, very cool.
You like the big giant the best. Okay.
Big smash, make things 7/7s. Make your stuff a 1/1. Add some goat in there, make them block.
Ooh.
I like
that. Was sneaky. I like that a lot. All right. Great new legendary creatures. I can see them going in a lot of different decks, mm-hmm. but we're not done. We have tons more new cards to talk about. Let's just jump right into the next category. Look. The face commander deals with auras and equipment. So we're going to hope that there are a bunch new pieces of auras and equipment. And guess what?
There are. Spoiler
we've
alert.
We've got 6 new pieces of aured equipment, and they're great. They're really fun. Let's jump right into them.
All right. So first up, we've got Holy Avenger. This is an equipment from D&D. It's 2 and a white, artifact equipment. Equipped creature has double strike. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, you may put an aura card from your hand onto the battlefield attached to it. Equip 2 and a white. So it is a white equipment. It has a white equip cost, so this can only go in white decks. But even so, giving something double strike is no laughing matter.
Yeah, double strike can do a lot of damage in this. I mean, I think that when people think of Voltron and Bant, they think of Rafik. Rafik of the Many, and that grants double strike for attacking. So I think that, you know, if you do like this theme, you know, getting a double striking equipment could be really good. What I love is that it lets you play with auras really nicely.
Yeah.
Right? It kind of gives you that balance. So if you want to go all equipment, fine. If you want to go all auras, fine. There are cards that do that already. But the idea of blending the two and having them overlap in certain ways, like, that's awesome.
Yeah, this card does a great job of blending the two because it's an equipment that also cares about auras. So it does exactly what the face commander is wanting to do.
What aura, overlap would, you, there. What aura would you cheat in, Murph?
What aura would I cheat in? I mean, a curse.
Ooh, a curse. Nice tech. I mean, I think I'm going to go with Eldrazi Conscription.
Eldrazi Conscription.
The biggest aura ever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Craig would go with, what, Corrupted Conscience or something like that to make it have infect or something like that.
It's fine.
But automatically, like, we just thought of 3 amazing things to cheat on to play with this card. And people aren't going to want to block the double strike. It just makes it so intimidating. And by the way, like, the cost to cast and equip is pretty comparable to other, you know, double striking things like Grappling Hook or Fire Shrieker or something like that.
Fire Shrieker's 3 and 2, I think, and this is 3 and 3, and you get that plain auras for free.
Yeah.
So assuming you're in that strategy regardless, I think that that's a great include. I also love the flavor because in D&D, the sword makes an aura around you.
Oh, that helps, and you get to cheat in auras into play.
And you get to cheat in auras. So it's like, Beautiful synergy.
Murph, bring in the flavor.
Flavor.
Awesome.
Love it.
All right. Next up, we have Mantle of the Ancients. It's 3WW for an enchantment or a enchant creature you control. When Mantle of the Ancients enters the battlefield, return any number of target aura and or equipment cards from your graveyard to the battlefield attached to enchanted creature. And enchanted creature gets +1/+1 for each aura and equipment attached to it.
This card's nutty.
This card's great.
This card's nutty.
It just rebuys all of your auras and equipment from the graveyard and just like whoop, sucks them back up to an irrelevant creature and then still pumps them.
Yep.
You know, Retether is a card that sees lots of play in aura decks and people love it, you know?
Yeah.
And if this is another version of Retether, that's great. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it synergizes both with equipment and auras lets us blend that line a little bit between auras and artifacts.
And also, if you are just playing just an aura deck or just an equipment deck, really doesn't matter. Like, this card is still great because it'll give you all the equipments back that have gone away, all the auras back that have gone away, like, and it buffs whatever you enchant with it.
Yeah, and I think that that's what people are afraid of when you play these decks, because these types of decks, you need the creature committed to the board and you need everything stacked up on it, which means that you have a heavy investment to the battlefield, and so a board wipe, a Vandal Blast, you know, anything that sort of wipes your game plan away can be devastating to the way that your deck works.
So literally all you have to do is sandbag this until somebody's like, okay, I'm going to remove all that stuff, and you're like, okay, don't care, get it all back, swing at you for lethal.
Yeah, you need cards like this to help you get back in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, you can get stuff back like your Lightning Greaves and your Swiftfoot Boots, and suddenly you have a threat that's attacking with haste out of nowhere.
That they can't get rid of.
Exactly. So, like, these are sort of game-ending effects that are incredibly powerful.
Yep. All right, moving on. Next one is Robe of Stars. It's a 1W artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +0/+3 and has Astral Projection, where you can pay 1W, equipped creature phases out and has equip 1. So it's pretty inexpensive to cast and equip. It's 1W and then 1 to equip. But in order to phase out, you do have to pay that extra mana. So what do you think of this card, DJ?
So I at first thought it was fine. You know, you need protection in these decks. I talked about how, you know, you put a lot of stuff onto the battlefield, and so protection is always good. But I was unimpressed by just buffing its toughness. You know, in these kinds of decks, I want to be able to attack, and sometimes pumping toughness does allow it to attack a little bit better. But most of the time, I want more power. You know what I mean? Like, I want evasion or something like that. So I immediately thought, like, oh, well, I guess this works really well in Doran or any other toughness matters decks really, really well. But then Craig came to me and said, oh, you are underestimating this protection value.
Yeah.
And honestly, I really was, because this has an amazing activated ability, because not only does it phase out the creature, it phases out everything attached to it.
Yes.
So sometimes people will try to, like, oh, I'll acidic slime those Swiftfoot Boots on your commander, you know, and someone else will be able to take that out. Well, okay, I'm going to phase it out. Not only does the commander phase out, but everything attached to it, every piece of aura, every equipment. So it provides a whole level of depth of protection, not only to your commander, but everything equipped to it. And when you phase out, it's so difficult to interact with it.
Yeah, that's something that's a lot of modern or, like, more recent players have just don't know about phasing, because the way that most people...
It's stupid.
Well, most people interact with, like, Teferi's protection, and it just phases everything out. So you're like, okay, I know everything's going to phase out. Mm-hmm. But the important part of phasing, like you said, is that it phases it out and everything attached to it. And that's not something that a lot of people will run into. So you can, like, get a lot of people with this, just like, oh, actually, I'm just going to phase everything out. Wait, you can do that? Yes, you can.
I think it's great levels of protection, and I'm a big fan. I do think it's a big cost to hold up too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not as bad as, I mean, 2 to protect something, I am willing to pay that cost.
2 is not the worst. That's like Heroic Intervention mana.
Or Counterspell. You know what I mean? Like, those are things that we're used to holding up, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's horrible, but it is definitely a cost.
The one thing that I'm a little bit disappointed about it is, see those stars on the robe?
I do.
Those are actually magic missiles. In D&D, you can remove a star and use it as a magic missile.
I want a magic missile.
I want a magic missile something too.
Wait, why can't I magic missile on this?
I mean, I feel like they simplified it for sake of, like, okay, what is the most thing that's this a piece
Robe
of equipment
of stars enters the battlefield
for.
With 4 magic missiles. Remove it to deal 1
cool.
damage to target.
I think that'd be pretty cool. But they just went and focused on the phasing part, the astral projection, which totally makes sense.
Got it. Okay.
Because like Robe of Stars, you can go to the astral plane.
Oh.
You can use an action, go to the astral plane, and just, like, peace on out.
What do you do in the astral plane? Just like get just donuts, you chill.
Just hang out.
Okay, cool. I like that.
Avoid combat, mostly.
Can I like go and like do my homework over there and then like come back to, yeah. and have everything ready? Okay, cool. I like that. All right, I got another piece of equipment for you here. It's winged boots. It's one and a blue for an artifact equipment. Equipped creature has flying and ward 4. And it has equip 1.
I really like this card. I like it like quite a bit.
It feels like Swiftfoot boots, right?
Yeah.
2 to cast, 1 to equip. Ward 4 is pretty close to Hexproof, right?
Yeah, because we were liking the Ward 3 on that big old giant dude. But Ward 4, like, that's hard to do.
Your Source of Bioshock is 5.
5. That's like best case scenario. Yeah, you have a 1 sure. mana removal. So it's going to be very, very difficult to try to get rid of something that's equipped with the Winged Boots. And flying is... like that's just such a great ability to have.
It's solid evasion. There's a lot of decks out there that do care about flying too.
Yeah.
And so I could see that they might want that. Where does flying rank in terms of evasion? Would you rather have trample or flying in some of these or an equipment matter stuff?
Flying, absolutely.
Okay.
Because yeah, what usually happens in commander games, especially in these pre-constructed commander games, is that the board will just get cluttered with a ton of stuff and it's just hard to punch through damage. And the flying creatures, the flying stuff just gives you that extra oomph.
So you feel like way more likely to have something cluttered on the ground and yes. not be able to get through with trample, but flying can oftentimes, even if you don't get through one turn, you just kind of pick away at them.
Yeah. You know?
And they can never muster enough creatures to actually take yours down in the air.
Yeah, because worst case scenario, say your commander's a 4/4 with vigilance, like that's already pretty big.
Yeah,
like
you're right.
Like it's dragons that it fights with and that's about it. Like you can get rid of all those small flyers just by keep attacking.
Hope I want something more than a 4/4 though. I don't want to attack.
Ideally,
with 4/4
we're talking about.
Come on, I don't want to attack.
We're talking about the floor here. The ceiling is great. The floor also not bad.
Do you think that this is so good? Like I mentioned, Swiftfoot Boots. Do you think it is good enough to compare to it, or do you think Swiftfoot Boots is like way out of this card's league?
I think it's a little bit of a different scenario for what you would include both in, because oftentimes I know personally I'll include Lightning Greaves or Swiftfoot Boots because I care mostly about the haste. The protection is great, but I care most about the haste. I want to play it, play my commander, equip it, go.
So this would be more comparable to something that grants evasion like Trample or, I don't know, Trailblazer's Boots that gives non-basic landwalk or something
yeah,
like that.
Something like that, or maybe got like Whisper Silk Cloak.
Got it. So kind of a false comparison a little there. Got it. Yeah. I totally agree.
And I know a lot of people will run Whisper Silk Cloak, but that's like 3 to play and 2 to equip, which I think is just like a little bit pricey.
Yeah.
Just for something that you want to have like be unblockable.
No,
I think
sure.
Winged Boots does a pretty darn good job of trying to fill that same
good
slot.
Good comparison. I like that.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. Well, we will be right back after this message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Next up, we have Belt of Giant Strength. 1 and a green, artifact equipment. Equip creature has base power and toughness 10/10. Equip 10.
Oh no.
But this ability costs X less to activate, where X is the power of the creature it targets.
Okay, but here's the thing. If you... So if you have a 5/5, mm-hmm. it costs 5 less to equip, but it doesn't boost it 10, boosts it only 5.
Yeah.
So it's always going to equip for the amount it buffs it for.
Correct.
Unless you have hydras where they're 10/10.
Hydras!
Where they're a 10/10 and they equip for free and then they become a 20/20.
This is going in every hydra deck.
Because, I mean, I think so,
I
right?
I think it does.
Because it has the base power and toughness 10/10 affect small creatures the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it just also goes in this deck because you cheat it onto a creature, right?
That's true, because with like, the commander's ability, you can play from the top of your deck.
You cast it off the top of your deck and it goes, whoop, and it just equips to something and makes it huge because 10/10 is intimidating.
Yeah, like 2 to cast, and then if you have something else that can just equip for free or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
Sigarda's Aid or other, there's tons of different things that like tap to attach, or you can move things around like Halvar, you know, can have you move things around and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think if you have like a critical mass of those types of effects, then this is a great include.
Yeah, it feels like it goes in the same decks that Colossal Hammer goes
yeah,
into.
Yeah, right? I love Colossal Hammer. It's such a fun card.
Okay, what do you think about this one?
I mean, I like it. I really like that.
I think you need to cheat it because I'm not going to be happy paying 6 to equip this to pump something up 6 power and toughness.
Yeah. Yeah, because I do love the flavor of it. The equipped creature has base power and toughness 10/10 because mm-hmm. the Belt of Giant Strength, it sets your strength modifier to something specific. It'll set it to 20. It sets it to 21, depending on the power of the Belt of Strength that you have. So
in D&D, can you like go out there and you get a Belt of Strength, but it's like from like a sheep and like it sets your strength to 3 and you're like, this Belt of Giant Strength sucks?
I mean, technically, you could homebrew something like that. But I don't know why you would. <Murph's> like, that seems a little silly.
Okay. But yeah, I guess that makes sense. It just kind of sets your strength and that's it.
Yep. Yeah. So I really like how they were able to take like mechanics from D&D and mechanics from Magic and like fuse them together, because it would have been so easy to say this gets +5/+5 or something like
but
that.
But that's not the Belt of Giant Strength.
But that's not the Belt of Giant Strength.
Got it.
So I really
cool.
like that they went to the trouble of doing
that's
that.
That's very cool. I'm glad you're here, Murph. Can you tell that I don't know the D&D stuff? I'm like, what happens if you kill it? I'm thinking about WoW. When you know, when in World of Warcraft.
WoW's basically D&D.
When you go, it's basically, oh my gosh, people are going to hate me. We got to cut this out. You got to keep going. Okay. Sword of Hours is a 2-mana artifact equipment. Whenever equipped creature attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, roll a d12. If the result is greater than the damage dealt, or the result is 12, double the number of +1/+1 counters on that creature. And it has equip 2.
So that's a lot of words.
It is.
What does it do?
Okay. 2 and 2. So 2 to two cast and 2 to equip.
Okay.
Immediately does nothing.
Cool.
That's not cool.
Okay, yeah, that's not that great.
So anyways, but here's the thing. It's equipment. You want to attack with your equipment. So as soon as you attack with it, your creature gets a +1/+1 counter on it.
Sick.
There are other things that equipment that do that too. But again, I'm still not happy with 2 to cast, 2 to equip, just add a +1/+1 counter to something.
Every time it attacks? Nah, it's not great so far.
It's fine. But then, whenever equipped creature deals combat damage, again, that's a hoop that you have to jump through, because mm-hmm. combat damage triggers can be really good. The Swords of have really powerful combat damage triggers, and sometimes it can be difficult to get that damage through, especially when you're not pumping the power or something like that. Mm-hmm. Roll a d12. So if I'm going to roll a d12, I'm going to statistically roll a 6 most of the time. So
yeah,
let's think about
that. It's a 12-sided die, so yeah, about 6.
Or 6, 6.5, yeah.
Yeah.
If the result is greater than the damage dealt, or the result is 12, double the number of +1/+1 counters on that creature. So if I have my commander, mm-hmm. I attack and put a +1/+1 counter on it, it's 5.
Okay.
I'm statistically likely to roll higher than that, so it'll double the number of +1/+1 counters on it to 6. Or no, 7 now.
Yeah, no. So
no, it adds one more.
It adds one more +1/+1 counter.
Well, that's not that impressive.
Well, it's not that impressive.
I think it has to hit again then, right?
Yeah, I
so
feel
you
like...
you attack again, you get another +1/+1 counter. Now there's 3 +1/+1 counters on it. But now you have to get lucky because now it has power 7. So you have to get a little bit lucky. And then when you double that, it'll become a 10/10 because it'll have 6 +1/+1 counters on it.
I feel like this card in particular goes a lot better on smaller evasive creatures. right? Because then you can get that combat damage trigger in, and then you say, okay, well, I didn't do that much damage, so of course I'm going to get the double of +1/+1 counters. Hmm. Do that a couple times, then you have a giant evasive flyer for not that much.
Can you just be lucky and roll a 12 every time?
I mean, that's the goal.
That's
right?
My that's,
that's
my,
what you want to do.
Can that be my strategy? Can I be smart and just roll 12s?
I don't think that's a very greedy strategy.
Okay,
I don't know if that's going to work out well.
So that means that if we do want it on smaller creatures, we do want to kind of move it around, right?
Yeah.
So is this two equip prohibitive to that strategy?
I don't think it's too prohibitive. Two to equip is kind of like the sweet spot of like, okay, powerful stuff like the swords have two to equip, and you can move them around semi-easily. It's not the easiest thing in the world, like a Swiftfoot Boots or Lightning Greaves, but it's also not too bad.
Definitely not as easy as Lightning Greaves.
Definitely not as easy. Nothing's as easy as Lightning Greaves.
So I think that we mentioned the swords twice, and this does not come anywhere near them.
No.
Because they have way more powerful on deals damage, but rolling is fun. Adding +1/+1 counters permanently buffs your creatures.
Yep.
So if you're in some sort of deck where you can sort of move this around, or if your strategy is like mine and you just plan on rolling 12s all the time, then
it's perfect.
Then it'd be perfect.
No problem.
Like I just described the scenario where this attacked for a second time and became a 10/10.
That would be way better. I like that a lot. Yeah. I want to do that.
But then it's still a 10/10. So then when I roll a 12 the next time.
Yeah, because you have to keep rolling 12.
Yeah, it'll be a 16/16 or something like that.
So it seems like a really fun card.
Yeah,
at the very least.
And again, if you are good at rolling 12s, it's an amazing card. All right. Those are the auras and equipments. I think that like Holy Avengers, insane. Mantle of the Ancients is spectacular, getting everything back. And then Robe of Stars is sneaky good. And then some of the other ones seem a little bit more narrow, but
I like the Winged Boots.
You like the Winged Boots?
I like the Winged Boots quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. I'll be putting that in tons of decks.
Awesome. Great, diverse, group of auras and equipments. It's not just pump power and toughness. It's like we do different things. That seems really cool.
All right.
Next up, we're going to move on to some interesting draw or card advantage strategies in this deck. And that's pretty much it. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Interesting card advantage stuff. Let's start off with a Elky Boy.
Fae Steed, 2 white-white creature, Elky Boy. It says that on the card, probably. Whenever Fae Steed attacks, another target attacking creature you control gains indestructible until end of turn. Whenever a creature or planeswalker you control becomes the target of a spell or ability an opponent controls, you may draw a card, and it's a 4/4.
Huzzah!
Huzzah! Oh, wait, I gotta get rid of mine.
All right. White cards that facilitate attacking are not something that I'm, like, super enthused about.
Mm-hmm.
But I am enthusiastic about drawing cards.
It's one of those Mongara things, right? Where you look at the attacking thing, the attacking clause, and you're like, well, this card's not that good. And then you realize that other clause about drawing additional cards is on there when people cast extra spells. And you're like, okay, never mind. This is great. That being said, how good do you think that second ability is?
I don't think that you're being targeted that much. Like Shaper Sanctuary or like some of those other effects where if they target it, a lot of times they don't trigger. And if they do trigger, they trigger like once or twice.
Yeah.
To be fair, if this triggers you drawing 2 cards, this is like a Elk Mole Drifter and it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think that you can reliably guarantee that it does trigger like that. I think it depends on your meta. If you find yourself playing against a lot of single target removal, a lot of creatures that have a lot of interaction, and this can reliably draw you 1 or 2 cards, like big thumbs up.
Yeah.
If people just avoid it and like your lines of attack aren't even that great, I don't know.
Yeah. So then that being said, the second ability is just okay. What do you think about the first ability in combination with the second ability? Does that make it like a somewhat okay card?
Granting something indestructible?
Yeah.
Doesn't grant itself indestructible, and
that's
it's
true.
Not that big to be able to tangle in combat.
It's a 4/4/4. That's not bad.
But in Commander, we want more than a 4/4/4.
Yeah.
Our 4/4s for 4 like need to be amazing, and you're not slamming Questing Beast in every single green deck.
Says who?
Murph. Are you slamming Questing Beast in every
green deck? I would if I built green decks. I don't have a green deck.
You don't even have a green deck?
That's a lie. I have Svela. That's the only one other than 5 color that has green in it.
Unbelievable. Look, yeah. I think I would play this for the art. This is, by the way, cutest card of the pre-constructed deck. Gonna go right out there and say it. He's adorable.
Automatically. It's an elk.
Automatically.
Goes straight in Elk Tribal. Every Elk Tribal deck ever.
Yeah.
Probably one of the best cards in Elk Tribal. Can you think of a better one?
No, I can't.
Goes great in Josh's Gigantha, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer deck.
Oh my gosh! Yes, we're finding, guys, we're finding corner cases for this. I think it depends on your meta, and if they have single target removal, I think it's awesome. But then the floor is too low because I don't want an attacking 4/4. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's meta dependent. Keep an eye on it. If your meta gets there, then it's worthy of an include, maybe.
Sounds good. All right. Next, we have Netherese Puzzle Ward. It's 3 and a blue for an enchantment. It says Focus Beam. At the beginning of your upkeep, roll a d4, scry X, where X is the result. It also has Perfect Illumination. Whenever you roll a die's highest natural result, draw a card.
That's interesting. So it will automatically roll at the beginning of your upkeep no matter what. And if you hit whatever that highest natural roll is, then you draw a card. So I like that it's a d4 because that's the smallest dice that you can possibly use.
So 25% of the time, you're drawing a card.
Yeah. Wait. That's not that good.
It's not that good.
It's not that good. So you definitely need other...
For 4-mana enchantment, like, you would actually draw a card every turn.
Yes.
Like, there are lots of them out there that can just say, hey, 4-mana every turn, just draw a card.
Yeah. I think that this is pretty fantastic in a deck that does care about dice rolling, right?
Ooh, so you just need to have... You need to be rolling more than one die a turn.
Yeah, it needs the support, because don't discount the scry. You are going to be scrying, so you're going to be getting some card filtering, which is really good. But if you're filtering every upkeep, like a OG Thassa or something, but also drawing cards randomly whenever you roll the best possible roll on dice.
So we have to suspend our judgment for this until we see the entire set, see all the die rolling cards.
Yeah.
Because if there are cards out there that just have us just like taking handfuls of dice and throwing them on the battlefield, because it's each die. Whenever you roll a die's highest natural result. So if there's a card out there, like good old Buzzbark or something like that, you know, that has you rolling multiple die, and I know that there are cards out there that have you rolling two dice, you know, then you could be drawing way more cards.
Yeah. I don't think this has too many applications outside of dice rolling decks, but I think in a dice rolling deck, like, this is going to put up some work.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Next up, we have Diviner's Portent. It's an instant. X, blue, blue, blue. Roll a d20 and add the number of cards in your hand. So, if you roll that d20 and add the cards in your hand and you get between a 1 and a 14, you draw X cards. But if you get 15 or over, scry X, then draw X cards.
Ooh. So, automatically, this card is just an instant speed, you know, draw X cards.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like Blue Sun Zenith.
Yeah, right? or there was one from the Commander's Insight or something like that from Strixhaven. And so this is a playable card.
Yes.
Without rolling or anything like that.
The floor of it is, it draws you cards, it's good, you can play it.
Yeah, instant speed, great.
It'll be great.
Okay. So floor is great, and then now there's this funny little die rolling thing in there. And honestly, like, a lot of times you'll have like 3 or 4 cards in your hand, so you have a good chance of scrying a ton and then drawing a ton too. So this gives you another whole level of interaction.
Yeah.
Because scry X, draw X becomes way better. This becomes like, you know, selection along with raw card draw. It's like a dig through time on steroids.
Yeah, because you'll likely have some cards in your hand, this is more or less like a 50-50 chance at being able to scry. So half the time it's a Blue Sun Zenith, which is still a great card. And half the time it's you scry a bunch and draw a bunch,
Like scry amazing. 5, draw 5.
It's amazing.
Oof. Okay. Not every deck can support blue, 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 and not every deck can support the X, but you'll know what deck, if you have that deck, you'll know it, you know, and you will be able to cast this for 5 and 6 and 7 for X, and it's going to be great. I'm stoked.
It'll get you exactly what you need.
I love that. Yeah. And in the late game, when you just need action or you need something specific, that scry is going to make sure that everything you get is action.
Mm-hmm.
Woo.
Oh, baby.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. And I think it's pretty good.
I think it's great. Okay. Next up, we have Song of Inspiration. 3 green green for an instant. Choose up to 2 target permanent cards in your graveyard. Roll a d20 and add the total mana value of those cards. 1 to 14, return those cards to your hand. 1 to 15, return those cards to your hand, and you gain life equal to their mana value. 5 mana, get 2 permanents back to your hand.
That's like pretty fine. Right. Yeah. We've seen cards that do this type of thing before, right? Where you get 2 like, cards back at about 5-ish mana.
You can get it for 4.
You can.
Yeah, you can get it for 4. And you can get 1 card back for 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have modal like Wildest Dreams where you can get 1 thing back for 3 and 2 things back for 5.
Yeah.
This is instant speed.
Yeah, that's true.
I like instant speed. I don't like that it's just permanence, though.
Yeah. That's the sad part. I want my regrowth or eternal witness type effects. I want to be able to get back what I want. Those instances, those sorceries. It probably just says permanent because they don't want you to chain them into each other.
But I want to be able to, if here's the thing, tutors that are limited, you know, are way worse than tutors can get anything because tutors are better if they're every card in your deck, right?
Yeah.
This is a tutor for your graveyard. Mm-hmm. And so if your deck is built around having really relevant permanents in your graveyard, then this gets fine.
Yeah.
You know? But if you have things in your graveyard that are relevant, like removal spells mm-hmm. or board wipes or something like that, then this suddenly loses a lot of its value. What do you think about the gaining life? Because honestly, that's what sets this aside from other cards that are honestly a little bit better than it.
I actually think it can be very good, assuming you're not returning like lands or something with that, assuming you're doing like a 4 or 5 drops and stuff, maybe yeah. even something that's bigger, a finisher that got removed and you can get that back. You do add, right? You roll the d20 and then add the total mana value of those cards that you targeted.
Yeah. So if so you're going after something big, you're
it's
probably
very, very likely that you're going to be able to gain a ton of life regardless of what you roll.
Okay. So I feel like this becomes more relevant in decks that where you want to gain that life.
Yeah.
Right?
Decks where you want to gain life and decks where you're going to be playing big-ish stuff.
So like a Tristani deck where you want to gain big life by paying big things.
Yeah.
You know, maybe green black decks that put stuff into the graveyard, but also black leverages your life total a lot. So
yeah.
getting two things back and gaining life can work better than in other decks.
Yeah. Those things seem perfect for
the Overwhelm,
deck.
I'm not overwhelmed by value in this. I'm like, I like other effects better.
What makes me a little bit curious is look at the art. This is a Song of Inspiration, right?
Okay,
so this is a bard.
Okay. Yes. Okay? I can see that.
It's a bard. Pretty sure it's a bard. Because the person is playing music to other people, right? So it's clearly a riff on Bardic Inspiration. How in the world does this relate to Bardic Inspiration? Do you know what Bardic Inspiration is?
I'm outraged. Of course I know what Bardic Inspiration is.
So Bardic Inspiration is a D&D ability where
it pumps all the badgers nearby you.
No.
Porcupines? What is this
thing? No.
what's this thing right there?
It's a person.
It's an armadillo? Oh, it's a person.
It's a person with hair. So Bardic Inspiration, if you're a bard, you can use Bardic Inspiration to give somebody a d6 to use on checks, to use on attack rolls and stuff like that. So you're helping somebody else out. So how does that flavor mesh with this? First of all, you're rolling a d20, not a d6. Flavor fail right there. Ooh. Second of all, how are you helping other people out? You're just helping yourself out. You're just getting stuff back from the graveyard.
It's true.
That's not Bardic Inspiration.
It should be pumping. You should be able to distribute counters or something like that.
Yeah, okay. What are we saying? We don't want card advantage or value. We want green to pump things.
Well, here's the thing. Like, we saw so much good flavor. Now I'm expecting good flavor, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm almost like, you've convinced me on all these other cards that it's just like, oh my gosh, they're just slam dunking the flavor.
Also,
get out of here.
Also, bards, they're like blue-red probably in the color pie, right? Because they're creatives and stuff.
So
why is the card green?
Of course they're blue. Of course they're blue and red in the color pie. Okay.
All right,
that's our card advantage section. Let's move on to the limited amount of removal that we have. But I like this one.
Yeah. Valiant Endeavor. It's 4 white for sorcery. Roll 2d6 and choose 1 result. Destroy each creature with power greater than or equal to that result. Then create a number of 2/2 white knight creature tokens with vigilance equal to the other result. So
6 mana board wipes.
6 mana board wipes.
Okay. What do we think about 6 mana board wipes in general?
They got to do a lot.
Okay.
They got to be like Austere Command, where they have to be very flexible, or are one-sided board wipes type thing once you start getting to that 6 mana area.
Okay.
Right.
So can this be a one-sided board wipe with this dice rolling thing?
Quite likely, because you can land on either end of the spectrum where you're playing small creatures and you want to wipe all the big creatures. You're playing big creatures and want to wipe all the small creatures.
Well, don't you wipe the big creatures too? If you can't just wipe all the small creatures.
Destroy. Oh, I suppose so.
So
you have to
only,
be in a small.
You have to be a small creature deck.
Yeah. So you got to be a small creature deck in order to do that, which is fine because it's going to give you 2/2.
Unless you roll 2 ones for some reason and then your plan is like destroyed.
Yeah. This kind of reminds me of like Marshall Coup.
I like Marshall Coup.
I like Marshall Coup too, but it's like a 7 mana board wipe that'll leave you with like, what is it, 5 1-1s?
5 1-1s.
5 1-1s. You can pump more mana into it to get more 1-1s.
So a 6 mana board wipe that can leave you with like 3 2/2s.
Yeah, that seems about right.
I like that.
Yeah.
All right, well, now that you compare it to Marshall Coup, it feels a little bit better. You know, Phyrexian, don't remember the name
Rebirth.
Of it.
Rebirth.
There we go.
Yep.
Phyrexian Rebirth is a 6 mana board wipe that leaves you with a creature.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's something kind of like that, but the dice roll does make it a little bit iffy. And that's, you got to roll what you need. You want, well, like 1-6 and one, like two or three, depending on where you're at.
There's a chance out there that like you need to kill something across the battlefield and you roll 2 6s. And then you're like, sweet, my wand draws me 2 cards and I make 6 knights, but you did not board wipe what you needed to.
Yep. That might be a feel bad that you get sometimes with this card.
Because I need my board wipes to be reliable, right?
Yeah.
Like I need them to do what they need to do, and attaching dice to it seems not as good. But do you know what? It might be powerful enough in those just right situations that we, you know, and there's some level of control because you're rolling 2 dice and get to pick.
Yeah, and I do like that one result you usually want to be low and one result you usually want to be high. And cool. So depending on what you need in that moment, you can say, okay, if I get 2 high things, that's fine. I'll just get a ton of tokens. I get 2 low things, that's fine. I'll just wipe the board.
It goes along with my strategy of always rolling exactly what I need.
That's it. Yeah. That's what you got to do. Just roll exactly what you need. This card will be fine.
Next up, we've got Clay Golem. It's 4 mana for a 4/4 artifact creature golem. Remember when 4 mana 4/4 golems, like just like in artifacts, it was like a drawback. It's like never going to happen. Oh my gosh. So this is just a 4 mana 4/4. You can ramp into this pretty easily. But again, 4/4s need to do a little bit of something in our format. Right, Murph?
I'd play it if it was just a 4 mana 4/4. Like that just seems so good. An artifact creature synergizes with so much.
Not an elk though. So we not can't. Yeah. Okay. You can pay 6 and roll a D8. Monstrosity X, where X is the result. Berserk. When Clay Golem becomes monstrous, destroy target permanent. So this feels like Meteor Golem a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
It definitely does.
So 4 mana to get on the battlefield, 6 to monstrous. Mm-hmm. So you are investing 10 mana to destroy something, but a lot is to be said about doing things in installments, right?
Yeah.
But this gets pretty big. It's already a 4/4. If you just roll a D6 on a, or a D8, sorry, your odds of getting like between a 4 and a 5 or whatever, you know? So you get a 4, this becomes an 8/8. That's fine,
that
right?
Seems pretty good.
An 8/8 that you've gotten there over 2 turns that destroyed something.
Yeah. And it destroys any permanent, which is great.
Yeah. I like to destroy lands.
You're a terrible person. You know that?
Yeah. This is great. What are you talking
about? I like destroying like Gaia's Cradles. How about that?
Okay, fine. We'll agree on that. I like destroying Gaia's Cradles.
DJ's like basic island. Get it out of here.
I mean, if you're playing the overpowered card island, it deserves to get destroyed. Come on.
Yeah.
Here's the downside though.
Yeah.
Meteor Golem sees a lot of play because it can be flickered.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it can be bounced and replayed a little bit more. Like there's some different ways to get it. I think that this sees some advantage if you have some +1/+1 counter synergies. Like if you flicker it, you still have to pay 6. Like it resets the monstrosity, but you still have to pay 6. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't think you really want this in a deck where you put it in the graveyard, reuse it, flicker it, or something like that. I think Meteor Golem still fills that role, but I like this card a lot in that when Meteor Golem comes out and does its thing, it's just a measly 3/3. This thing can attack. It can do things. Worst case scenario after you monstrosity, you've blown something up and it's a 5/5. That is like the floor. But it's also possible.
But yeah, blowing something up is just good.
But it's also possible that it's a 12/12. Which is also huge.
12 is big.
12 is big.
All right, yeah.
Or you can get anywhere in between. I think this goes great in like big mana decks that are looking for removal.
All right. We're moving on to the unexpected creatures. Surprise creature.
Wow. All right, so this surprise is going to be Ride the Avalanche. That's kind of a surprise. Green and a blue, instant. The next spell you cast this turn can be cast as though it had flash. When you cast your next spell this turn, put X +1/+1 counters on up to one target creature, where X is the mana value of that spell. That's interesting.
Flash creature in. Yava creature in. Savage summoning a creature in.
Yep.
Or anything, actually. It can quicken something in. Although, it's quicken isn't a good comparison because quicken draws you a card.
Yeah.
This doesn't draw you a card. This lets you put +1/+1 counters on it.
Yeah. So, it can give flash to any type of spell. It can be creatures.
Board wipe.
It can be whatever. But it does care about creatures specifically. So, I feel like you probably still want this in a deck that has a decent amount of creatures. That are just chilling there. The thing that I don't like about it is you can't put those 1/1 counters. Say you flash out a creature, you can't put those 1/1 counters on the creature that you
play. Yeah, because it says when you cast your next spell, then you put the counters on it. So your creature has to already be on the battlefield.
Yeah, if you cast a creature with this, the creature's going to be on the stack, and this ability will be like, okay, well, you cast that creature, now put 1/1 counters on all of the cards on your battlefield, or one of the creatures on your battlefield. It can't see the thing that's already on the stack because it's not on the battlefield yet. So that's a little bit sad.
So you need this to be like in a super sneaky deck, or you need this to be in a deck that cares about +1/+1 counters. Craig likes it because, and I mean, we got into a little back and forth because he says that sneaking in infect creatures is very important, mm-hmm. or putting plus one counters on infect creatures at instant speed is important too.
That's true.
So but just being able to be like, two mana, cast anything, pump this creature up.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, you are using a card in order to do it, and there's already stuff that, like Vedalken Orrery, there's even lands that'll let you pay two mana and flash something out.
You are absolutely right.
Without, it doesn't have that plus one counter writer on it.
So it feels like you need the plus one counters because the flash is fine and there are other things that do it better.
Yeah.
So
there's definitely other things that do the flash part better.
Yeah. Okay. So how many plus one counters do you need for this to be good?
You'd already like to have some sort of plus one counter synergy on the battlefield. Because that would be pretty sick if you just doubled plus one counters and you put like six on. Now that's 12. And now it's a giant thing on the board.
So your instinct is to say, I want 12 counters. I want this to generate 12 counters.
Yes.
Okay. So we can see that like in Murph's not going to be playing this with this card because 12 counters is magical Christmas.
Well, I also don't have a plus one counter deck. But I feel like that's the home that this wants to have, if anything at all.
All right, so needs testing in plus one counter decks, can do some sneaky stuff in sneaky decks.
Or maybe I'll just die to infect and be like, man, that card's
yeah,
actually
we gotta wait and let Craig kill us with infect. All right, last card. We have Ebony Fly. It's a two mana artifact. Ebony Fly enters the battlefield tapped. It taps for a colorless mana. Just a little fly. It comes in and goes, hey, have a colorless.
But it's just an artifact, not an artifact creature.
Oh, it's just an artifact. But then, you know, right? Because it's a fly.
Well, why is a fly just an artifact?
Because it can be animated. You can pay four and roll a d6 until end of turn. You may have Ebony Fly become an XX insect artifact creature with flying, where X is the result. Whenever Ebony Fly attacks, another target attacking creature gains flying until end of turn. So,
interesting.
Ebony Fly at its base level is a little two mana artifact. Two mana artifacts are totally fine. We play two mana ramp spells. Two mana ramp spells are way better than three mana ramp spells. So it's just this little fly that taps for mana, but then in the late game, pay four, not an unreasonable amount to turn your fly on, mm-hmm. roll a d6, you know, mm-hmm. odds are it's becoming a 3-3 flyer. Could be a 6-6 flyer.
Could be a 6-6 flyer.
But more importantly, it lifts up another creature. It says, hey, big dinosaur next to you. Hey, a big commander that's a 7-7 turning other things into 7-7s. Yep. Hey, you know, person that liked the winged boots so much. You know, I'm going to give a lift to some other big chonky boy and get in for more damage. On its floor, it's amazing. And I'm overselling this because Murph said he didn't like the fly and I love the fly.
The fly's fine. I'm not saying that the fly is a bad card. But at its base, if you're not going to use that extra ability, it is four mana to do. If you pay two mana and it's an artifact that enters the battlefield tapped and adds a colorless, that's not a
great,
good...
Great, it's great.
That's not a good two mana artifact. It's not a good two mana artifact, TJ.
It's fantastic.
Most two mana artifacts...
What would you rather have, this or Thought Vessel?
Thought Vessel. 10 out of 10. It enters
untapped. 10 out of 10?
Okay.
Murph and I are going to fight out of 10. On camera.
9 out of 10.
Right now.
There's definitely homes for this.
Homes are in any deck that wants to attack that has a big creature on the battlefield.
I do like decks that have big creatures on the battlefield.
Didn't you just say that you like the creature Blightsteel Colossus and wish you could give it flying?
I do. This could give it flying, couldn't it?
It could.
So then it I could just one-shot somebody.
You could give a lot of creatures flying. You give any creature flying. It could be this own little fly that just goes bzzz, poke. Bzz, poke. Granted, like, that's not its base value, is just a rock. But come on, like, your Thought Vessel might work every so often. Mm-hmm. I wonder how often you're going to activate this and swing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested to see, like, how often that four mana does get paid.
Okay, so here's the thing. That's what we need to figure out.
Yeah.
Because I'm imagining me activating this once a game in the right deck. And then Murph is thinking, well, I'm hardly ever going to activate this, so I want a rock that doesn't come into play tapped.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, well, I've taken a lot of the lands that have some sort of utility on them where you pay mana into them and they do something. I've taken a lot of those out of my deck because I've realized, well, how much do I often use those? Very rarely. Although
that's a good thing for everyone to do. Just kind of like reflect on how often you're using those free activated abilities on your lands, on your artifacts and stuff like that. So here's what we got to do. We got to just put these in decks. We got to just get a Sharpie out and we got to just sort of mark when Ebony Fly is good or bad. And then
good mark, bad mark.
Exactly. Just like Mana Crypts, you know, just that's what you do to Mana Crypts, right? You do good and win and lose. and Liz from there. And then we just got to test it, right?
Yeah.
I think it's great. Murph thinks that he would rather have a Thought Vessel. Tell us what you think in the comments down below. I'm a Please. Fan of Ebony Fly. Okay. So we're going to talk about the...
stats.
Excellent job.
Oh, thank you.
What are the stats of this deck? Well, let's just break it down. Murph, what we got here?
All right. So we have 9 total pieces of ramp. 9 total pieces of card draw, 9 targeted removal pieces, and 3 board wipes. That's pretty good, DJ.
That's really good.
That's about it's, where we want to be.
That's super well-rounded, honestly. Yeah. Like, that just feels like a balanced deck. And in looking at this deck and breaking it down, like, yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. Like, there's totally solid pieces of ramp in here that you're going to want in your commander deck. There's good top-tier pieces of single-target removal. Like, I am very excited about how well-balanced this deck is going to play. And so, if you pick this up and just bust it out of the box, it's going to be able to hang with the average commander deck that is ramping, that is drawing cards.
Yeah, it'll do the thing. It'll draw you some cards. It'll ramp you. It'll deal with what needs to be dealt with.
Do you know what else the thing it's going to do is?
What?
Suit up!
Heck yeah!
It is. This deck is filled with auras and artifacts and equipment specifically. Basically, it's all about loading up a creature with those auras and equipments. There are 20 cards that are equipment, that care about equipment, and there are 14 cards that care about auras. There is some overlap. Like, you know, this... some of these cards that pull back equipments or auras, like we count them in both categories. But basically, there's a critical mass of these.
Yeah.
Like, this is a big theme in the deck. And so you're always going to be paying attention to, well, what equipments do I have? What auras do I have? How am I suiting things up? There's the occasional card in here that only cares about equipment or only cares about auras, you know? And so that's something to think about, you know? How am I building this deck? How much overlap is it, you know? But overall, I like the theme of caring about both auras and equipment together because it's different. Because we have aura decks out there. We have equipment decks out there. Let's bring them together.
I do too. And I like that they do have a critical mass of equipments and auras. And I like that they have a critical mass of overlap, which is really the key in order to making the strategy work.
So, Murph, does this deck sound fun to you? Fun to play?
Yes, please. Can I play it right now?
Actually, yeah. We can finish up this podcast. And
we're going to go play Game of Magic.
Why does it sound fun to you? Like, what about it has entranced you so far?
The unique, like, cross synergies between everything, I think, right? Because you do care about auras, you do care about equipments, you do care about Voltron, and you do care about all this stuff, but it's not... splitting the deck in too many different directions. Like, it is possible to take the deck one way or the other, but I think at its core, if you just take it out of the box and play with it, it will play just fine.
It sounds like you're describing a balanced deck, you know?
And I think that's like what this is, DJ.
And it's not so focused in on one thing that you're doing one thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's balanced. It balances auras and equipments. It has a really cool thing, but also your commander isn't just caring about attacking too.
Yeah.
It's caring about playing stuff up the top and cheating man on equipping and stuff like that. So it feels like it's doing more than just, I'm going to suit something up and turn it sideways.
Yeah, I've talked with this about Josh before, about the thing you don't want to do with your deck is you don't want to take it in too many different directions. That's how your deck just starts to fall apart and not coalesce. It doesn't have any cohesion, right? So being able to focus on, you got two things, you have auras, you have equipment, you got support for both, right? Just being able to focus on those things, I think, is really important.
Good. All right, great. That sounds awesome. Okay, I want to play this for sure. All right. But here's the thing. These decks are almost always fun, you know? But a lot of times the barrier for picking one of these up is, does it make sense financially? Like, is it worth the money that I'm going to put into getting one of these pre-constructed decks? Like, am I going to get my return on value on investment? Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a look at the financial value of this deck. One thing to note is that we are looking at reprints only. These cards aren't out in the world right now. There are no prices for any of these cards.
We have no idea what they're worth.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so we are looking at the reprints only. We're also looking at the reprints before anyone else has seen the reprints or valued them or done anything. One thing that's great, though, is that we do this same technique, the same method for every single pre-constructed deck, and we've done this for years. And so we have the same data to pull for all of our decks so we could compare the deck's value. So let's put some context in there. Commander 2019, what was the average reprint value, Murph?
Average reprint value of Commander 2019 was $80.
All right.
It's pretty good.
All right. Yeah, Commander 2020, the Ikoria set.
$96, even better.
Ooh, even better. Okay. What about Strixhaven that just came out?
So the average reprint value for that was $88.
Which, by the way, turns out to be pretty average. When we go back even further and pull other data, we found that $87 seems to be the average.
Yeah. All right. I think the highest from that one was the Ausgear deck. That was like $103, I believe.
Okay, cool.
What we said it was. So that was so like the top end.
The top end for that was like $103. All right.
Which is
so
awesome.
Commander 2021, but this is Adventures in Forgotten Realms, the Commander pre-constructed decks from this. Aura of Courage, the Bant pre-constructed deck. The reprint value is
$138.65. What in the world? How did they jam so much value in here?
We went from an average of 88 to 138?
That's more than the price of a booster box. I can buy like one and a half booster boxes with the value in this.
Oh my gosh.
That's crazy.
$138. That's epic, honestly. So we gotta break it down. We gotta look at these reprints.
Yeah.
We gotta see where the value is and how these reprints are going. Is there just like $100 card in here that's like messing with all the numbers?
Well, let's take a look. So the major reprints, we have 7 cards in total that are over $5. The deck average for Strixhaven Index was there were only 3 cards over $5 in each deck. That was more than average.
Double the number of $5 plus cards.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the top ones are Heroic Intervention at about $15.
Whoa, so there isn't a weird skew where there's like one really, really expensive card.
We saw that with the Lorehold deck that we broke down, right? Because there was like the 1,000-year Elixir and the Hellkite Tyrant, and that gobbled up most of its value.
Got it. So the top card is $15. By the way, Heroic Intervention.
Still a great card.
Amazing. Still a great card. By the way, new art.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Love it.
It's awesome. I love it. That's great. All right, let's keep going.
All right, we got Sword of the Animist at $15. I did not realize that this card was so expensive.
Do you know what? It crept up because it's just good.
Yeah, it's great. They reprinted it a couple times, but it hasn't seen like super mass reprinting, so I'm really glad to see it here. It's an equipment deck. Fits great with the theme.
Absolutely.
Another one, Utopia Sprawl at $14.
The Mana Ramp.
It's an uncommon, DJ. Uncommon.
I gotta say, like, cheap aura-based ramp is very good.
Yeah.
Like, just, you should be playing it in a lot of your different green decks, not just decks that care about auras. But in this deck, where you can play it off the top, good stuff.
I'm glad.
Here goes all your super aura stuff. I love that. Okay.
Yep.
Didn't know it was $14, though.
I didn't either.
Okay.
I knew
it was expensive. Get that price down.
All right. Next, we got Pure Steel Paladin at $13.
Loves equipment. This is one of the cards that is really good in equipment decks, but doesn't trigger on auras.
Yeah. It does nothing for auras, but is absolutely fantastic in equipment decks.
And also having a $13 card that is a staple of equipment decks is great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next, we got Nature's Lore at $6.50, also with new art.
Beautiful new art.
Also, I didn't know it was $6.50.
I know, but we said, like, this is, again, ramp. You know, it's 2-mana ramp. It's cheap ramp. It's not as good as Ebony Fly. Just kidding. It's better than Ebony Fly.
Slightly better than Ebony Fly.
But it's just an amazing card, and so I'm glad that, again, that gets cheaper. You could play with more efficient ramp.
Uh-huh. Next, we got Imprisoned in the Moon at $5.
I didn't know this was $5, too, but...
Yeah, I've ran it in Braids for the longest time, and...
Aura-based removal... You know, they can strand a commander on the battlefield is great. Also, it's mana ramp in blue, right?
Yeah, I believe it hits planeswalkers too.
Ooh.
Which is pretty snazzy. And then we got Greater Good at $5. This one was like just reprinted in Double Masters, but still glad to see it here because this is a nutty card if you're playing green and you have creatures, which if you're playing green, you probably are. Greater Good is excellent.
Big creatures can draw you so many things. Just imagine, we've got like Belt of Strength in here, making something a 10-10.
Oh my goodness. You know what I mean?
I mean, you got the giant that can turn something into a 7-7. You're like, okay, I'm going to turn my stupid thing into a 7-7. I'm going to attack with it, and then I'm going to sacrifice it to Greater Good.
Yeah, or someone's like, I'm going to remove your 7-7, and you're like, okay, that's fine. I'll just sack it and draw a billion cards.
I'm going to steal your Voltron guy and do a lot of damage with it.
Nope, I'm just going to sack it.
Yeah, I'm fine.
It's great.
Woof.
Yeah.
A lot of these are not just like, there is the Pure Steel Paladin that is equipment-based only, the very specific equipment-based decks, but a lot of these are just great staples.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like just ramp and card draw and removal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I've played plenty of these cards before in plenty of my commander decks and will continue to do so. So I'm glad to see a lot of them here.
Amazing. If we look at all the cards over $2 in value, there are 22 of them.
Ooh, baby.
That includes the ones that are over $5 because 5 is more than 2.
Even so.
But then Strixhaven's deck average was 14 cards over $2. So this is going well beyond getting to that 22 mark. Some just a few of the mentions out there. We've got some great equipment: Basilisk Collar, Colossus Hammer, and Swiftfoot Boots with new art.
Love it.
So these are all just great pieces of equipment that you've included in this deck, but also they've upgraded the mana base a little bit too. Mm. They've included cards like Canopy Vista, Port Town, and Fortified Village in this deck, really giving you a little bit more of a well-rounded mana base, because this is three colors, and sometimes the mana bases can get a little bit sticky.
Yeah.
These are not, you know, shock lands in here. That's not fetch lands, but getting, you know, $2 to $3 or $4 reprints of lands and bringing the price down makes all budget decks work a little bit better. So I'm really happy to see just all of these cards that creep up in price a little bit, getting those budget duels a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, so much better. We want to keep these at $1 for all the budget players, or just everybody in general.
For me too. Yeah.
For us too. We want to build decks with cards like these in them. So
absolutely. So what do you think about all of these, of all the reprints? Like, we didn't even touch on the entire reprints, but
we have 22 of them.
I know,
we
right?
have so much time.
Yeah. What do you think?
This is really good. I love to see this. I was impressed with the Lorehold stuff from last time, but this is just even better.
I know.
I can't believe it.
It's really cool.
Wizards right. keeps out doing themselves, and hopefully they'll continue to blow my mind. What if it gets to $200 reprints? Okay, maybe that's a little bit much.
All right. Well, tell me, are you excited about this deck? Are you going to build these commanders? What cards do you think slot perfectly into Aura of Courage? Tell us in the comments down below. Also, I want to thank Wizards of the Coast for this free preview.
Thank you,
Wizards. And I also want to thank Guard Kingdom, because they sponsor the Command Zone. And if you go on over there, use our affiliate link, get all the cards that you need.
It's pretty awesome. They have all of the theme stuff. I believe they have like themed playmats and sleeves specifically for this commander that'll come out at some point.
I mean, if you're getting a themed playmat or sleeve, you should look at Ultra Pro.
Yeah.
Over on Card Kingdom, over at your local game store.
Zone.
Yeah. Ultra Pro is great. They got the amazing art for it. So get all of your Ultra Pro products out there. If you like Ultra Pro deck boxes, we have one on Kickstarter. Maybe. We don't even know if it's still on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But hopefully it is. Head on over there right now. We're reminding you again before they're all sold out, because they're in limited quantity.
Mm-hmm.
There is no end step, because this is an extra episode.
We got a lot of these.
We got a lot of extra episodes.
Got plenty of stuff coming out. Stay tuned. Notification bell. Subscribe. Whole shebang. You know what to do. This is YouTube.
Tell us who else to thank, Murph.
Big thanks to our amazing editing team here at the Command Zone. We've got Lady Danger, Manson Lung, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Alfred Estaca, Josh Murphy, that is me, Jake Boss, Patrick Nunn, Jordan Pridgen, Arthur Meadowcroft, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, and Dan Sheehan.
And I'm DJ from the Jumbo Commander YouTube channel. Murph, it was so nice to do a podcast with you, especially one as exciting as previewing this deck. I am thrilled to see what else we have in this Dungeons & Dragons set.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It was fun breaking this down, and hopefully a lot of you guys had fun seeing all these brand new cards, because I know I did.
Absolutely. All right, special thanks to Jeffy Palmer. He does a lot of art for us at Living Cards MTG. And thank you for watching. We'll see you all really soon.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.